Thank you so much for your very kind and also expert introduction. I'm very happy really to be again with all of the Upbuild community. I am here in Berlin, near Berlin at the moment, where I'm writing a book on the deeper meditational experiences and how one can have them, or what one can do to attract divine revelations. So it's a subject which is very close to me at the moment, in my because of writing this new book. Yeah, I thought we would go about like this. I will give you or tell you about an spiritual experience during this session, and then I would like to also offer you some simple ways in which you can also have such spiritual experiences. See, perhaps some 30 years ago, I thought to write down a mission statement, something which is very much in my life present. And I came up with this definition. Every day I wish to touch the divine, and I want to also be helpful for others to also make their spiritual experiences. So, connecting with this mission, I will not just say this happened to me and so on and leave you with something which you can look at from the distance, but I will actually try to chalk out a path that is walkable for you to also make spiritual experiences. That is a little bit my mission statement in this series. What is a spiritual experience? In the Oxford definition, in the Oxford Dictionary, we find an interesting definition for miracles, and a spiritual experience is something like a miracle. A miracle is an extraordinary and welcome event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws and is therefore attributed to a divine agency. So we are dealing with such experiences in these sessions, experiences that cannot be explained by just natural laws, and experiences where we have to see the cause of them, the source of them, is divine. You will be very interested to find out that there is one father of modern science, Roger Bacon, who in his work Opus Maius explains these type of experiences. He says, experiences comes in two forms. One is through our outer senses, and this is how we experience the heavens and below. This is human scientific experience, but this has a problem. It cannot explain anything about spiritual things. Therefore, man's mind needs to be helped through other means. These are the other experiences. And this is how the holy prophets and saints, who were the first to give science to the world, received enlightenment. They were not remaining in the senses. There are these two ways of attaining knowledge. One is through natural experience, and the other is through divine inspiration, which is much better. This inner science has seven steps, and then he goes on explaining about this. So yes, we are dealing with the much better type of experiences, which comes through from above and are received in something that can be called a divine inspirations. My dear everyone, if I may say very boldly in the beginning, for me a day without miracles or spiritual experience is quite boring because I know only a very small percentage of my whole being, that is my senses and my mind, are active, but my intuition, my inspiration, and finally my spiritual faculties may be sleeping during this time. To have spiritual experiences, we really need to deepen our vision. And we need to look for spiritual experiences not far away in the spiritual world or some spiritual realm. We should look really into our immediate environment. Because there are two ways you can look at your environment. Everything is a miracle, or nothing is a miracle. This comes from Albert Einstein. If you deepen your vision, you can discover spiritual experiences, miracles, everywhere in your ordinary life also, in your environment. But if you have not trained to look with a deeper vision, you will not have a spiritual experience even in a temple or a church or somewhere out in nature. We need to train our spiritual vision to have spiritual experiences. The experience which I would like to share with you is something that is very dear to me. It happened after I had a visit in the hospital, which was so painful. I had to go to the hospital because of a surgery. I had a very painful fistula, and I remember the day when I was committed to the hospital, and I was already in my room. They brought another patient into my room. It was a two-bedroom, and this poor patient also had a fistula, and he was screaming the whole night. I never can forget his screams. I remember I was phoning the nurses, please, you need to give him some pain medication. And they tried, they gave, but the pain was so much. And I had the same, but I was trained a little with pain. I've seen a lot of pain on my physical body, and I'm practicing a spiritual life, so I was not screaming, but I had the same situation going on. This pain is compared to the pain a woman experiences when giving birth. So the surgery was successfully completed, and with this trauma still in my mind, I remember the day when I was released from the hospital. I drove with a car, or I was driven. I mean, someone had gotten me from the hospital. And the forest was touched by spring. There were small leaves, green leaves everywhere. I could see flower buds, and the trees were budding. It was really very, very, very encouraging, I can say it. I quickly visited our little ashram to just settle. But then I asked those who had gotten me from the hospital if they could please bring me to my favorite bench, which was in the forest at the edge of a beautiful lake. So they brought me to this bench. I was not yet walking I needed help. They set me down on the bench. I remember they put a white wool blanket over me, and then I asked to be left alone. So they went somewhere. I said, in 2 hours, please bring me back. And I was alone with the nature and with my memories of that traumatic stay in the hospital. And as I closed my eyes, I breathed in very deeply, hoping that the strength of the awakening nature, spring nature, would also come into me and heal whatever needed to be healed after the surgery. I remember after some time, I opened my eyes. I was now peaceful, and I saw next to me 2 black ducks. I think they're called cots in English. They were not there before. They were just very close to me. These are very shy, but they had seen my peaceful, I felt my peaceful nature, and I again closed my eyes and continued to breathe in and out. And when I opened the eyes again, I saw a deer coming and sitting very close to me. I continued to breathe and open again the eyes, because I started to think, oh my God, the family is growing here. And then I saw Hubertus, whom I always had wanted to see. He was a wild boar who was, I had heard this from our neighbor, the chief of all the boars who lived in that area of Germany. And he was also lying there and kind of dozing and doing his Hubertus thing. I don't think wild boars are so actively meditating, but he was just very peaceful there. And I felt what I had experienced many times before the spiritual experience happened. I came away from the world of my mind, where we feel separatedness from the animal world, the plant world, the entire world. We sometimes feel separated even from our neighbor, or some feel separation from their partners when they are in this certain type of consciousness, where they are thinking of achieving things and becoming a little bit reduced, becoming a little bit selfish. No, here my consciousness had somehow widened, and it embraced the cots, the deer, and even Hubertus. I never saw Hubertus again. I only saw him this one time. And I felt what is most probably the first vision of the awakening mind, the interconnectedness, The I, and mine, stepped in the background. And what stepped in the foreground was the experience of the we. We are all connected. We are all belonging to each other. Vasudeva Kutumbakam, says the Maha Upanishad. The world is one family. This was what I started to see. It was a prelude. A prelude in music is a piece of music that introduces the main theme. So this was the prelude, but then the spiritual experience came on in full strength. I have written about it, and I will share this. It is coming in the newly upcoming book. I suddenly felt that a door had just been open. What I understood is that all of us, humans and animals, are breathing in the same air. But upon further reflection, it became clear to me that it wasn't us creatures who were doing the breathing. We were being breathed. Each one of us was supplied with breath by the divine breather. I think we all have seen when there are accidents, sometimes people lose their breath. They lie down after they have been pulled out of the cars and cannot find back their natural breathing. At that time, a rescue worker will come and he will bow over the person and he will blow air through the mouth into his lungs and inflate the lungs, and then he will breathe in and the lungs will shrink, and in this way the lung function will start again. So I felt a soothing connection washed over me and an indescribable happiness, because I could see, yes, the Lord was breathing through all of us. We were all connected with each other through something that was much, much greater than each one of us. With this new spiritual insights, all of a sudden, nature came awake, and not in a biological sense, in a spiritual sense. I saw sparks of life dancing everywhere, joining together in a cosmic dance of life. We were all brought together by the great weaver who upholds the structures of the universe. And I told myself, nature is fully alive. The consciousness behind matter was no longer hidden. My separatedness was overcome. When I was young, I had a profound interest in America, and my hero, American hero, was Chief Seattle. He is one of the original people who lived in America before the English and French and everyone else came. And Chief Seattle, although so much injustice was done to his people, was striving to have some connections with the white population, and to live in peace and give everyone some piece of land and so on and so forth. And he wrote something very nice. He said, he did not write, I think, he spoke something. Humankind has not woven the web of life. We are but one thread in it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. All things are bound together. All things connect. My dear everyone on this call, this experience, not theoretical, but practical, is such a good spiritual experience. It helps you to give up the small mind of I and my interests, my worries, my anxieties, and to enter into the big mind. Oh, we are all together. All things rest on Krishna's energies like pearls on a thread. And I must really say to you, when I came to the out of the hospital, highly exhausted, very much, you know, hospitals are atmospheres of pain, especially the one where I was. It was a specialized hospital on people with severe pain. When I came out of this atmosphere and sat on my favorite bench by the lake and looked out on the lake and seeing sparks of life, the fishes, the birds, the animals around me, all were part of this one phenomena called life, which is given into this world by the divine breather, by God, by Krishna. I felt so happy. I could connect with Krishna through his nature. And you will see in the ancient work called Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the first step in God realization. Don't look always very far. Look very close to you, and you will see spirit interwoven into everything. There are three steps which I have developed since that time, which I would like to share with you. If you are a note taker, this is the moment to take a note. I will first tell you the steps, and then I want to bring you on a bench by the lake next to Hubertus and the deer and lead you in meditation through the steps. But I will first frame your experience by giving you the idea so that it's easier for you to get into it. The first step is we understand and see ourselves as the soul within the body. What you do here is you go a little bit under the surface of your daily thoughts. You calm your mind and you connect with your spiritual essence, the unchanging true self, which remains the same no matter what thought traffic passes through your head on that day. So you connect with the soul in the body. Then the next step is you become mindful of your origin. I call this the more than human reality. This is a very careful expression. You know, for me as a monk, this is Krishna and his many, many expansions and incarnations and so on. You, but if you are still, let us say, not clear what is the more than human reality, then at least you know there's some force which holds everything together. So you connect with that. And the third step is finally try to see that divine presence all around you. You tell yourself, just like me, all of us beings, the policeman in New York, the taxi driver in New York, the few insects in New York who have not yet been killed, all of us are part of that one reality, and we are connected to each other like the leaves on a tree. So we will do this. How is the sound? Is it too loud or is it all right? It's good. Edward, is the sound all right? This I've put on a sound. Good. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, I see. Chandu is there. Roberto is there. Kati is invisible, but she's there. Michael is there. Good. This is the people I see before me. So, I request you to find a very peaceful sitting place. I mean, what I want to say is to make yourself comfortable on your seat. You're already seated. And let us make a few deep breaths. In and out. You can imagine you're breathing into the area where your collarbone is. It will help you that you do some nice breath that fill your lungs and fill out. Most of what you are is invisible. Your thoughts, ask yourself the question, who or what sees your thoughts? And you will arrive at the intellect, which sometimes says, oh, there's no reason to be anxious now. Who or what sees the intellect? Who or what lies deeper than our thoughts and our intelligent musings? And you will arrive at your true self, the spirit, the soul that is within the heart. Again, return to a few relaxed and deep breaths. And bring your attention to the heart space where you, the self, resides. Perhaps you can sense the lightness as you breathe in and out. Perhaps you can feel the easiness, which is part of the self. Finally, turn to the Supreme Being, Krishna, Govinda, God. In your true essence, you're really His part. And see that everyone is your part, the part of the Lord. The policeman in New York, the taxi driver, even the animals. In their true essence, their spiritual essence, are all the part of that one Supreme Being. Everything and everyone rests on that Supreme Being, just like pearls are resting on a thread. Sense the calm. Sense the interconnectedness. For a few moments, just allow yourself to simply repose in that state. I'm part of Krishna. I'm part of God. And so is everyone else. Good. You can slowly return to your normal awareness. I will give you a little time. I will also look in this room. We have a guest from New York who just came now, and he must be jet lagged. Maybe he's asleep in one corner. No, he's not. Good. The point of my first session is spiritual experiences are possible for everyone, not just the few selected, the monks who have dedicated their life for the spiritual path. Really, the spiritual reality is all around us. It just needs the vision. There is a little story of two philosophers, actually it's of two fishes, who were swimming by a mole. On the outer edge of the mole were two philosophers who were watching the ocean from above, and they were talking about the ocean. Oh, there are so many waves, said one philosopher. The other philosopher said, I don't really see the wave phenomena so much. I recognize more the depths of the ocean in which so many aquatic beings swim. So these two fishes were able to understand the human language. They were continuing to swim, and they said, do you know what they're talking about? The ocean? Where is the ocean? asked one fish. The second fish said, well, I guess they saw something, so I'm highly interested to find out where the ocean is. Okay, said the first fish, you can find out. I'm going back to my fish tribe and live my fish life. You swim freely, and when you find the ocean, please come back to our tribe. I think a fish, you would say, a swarm, and tell us about the ocean. So after 100 years, these were really long-living fishes, the fish who had gone for an exploration came back, and his friend asked him, welcome to our little swarm. Can you tell me, did you find the ocean? And the fish who saw the ocean said, yes, I found the ocean, but you wouldn't believe me if I told you. Because the first fish didn't have the vision. My dear everyone, spiritual experiences happen if you take sincerely to a spiritual practice. And it can be as simple as just going into Central Park. There's nature is there. I'm a lover of Central Park. Finding a bench, or like we did last time, we found some good stones, and sitting there, and looking at nature with respect. Respect means to look again, not just first glance, it means on second glance. You will see a wonderful force working through the nature, giving, transforming it, and making it green now, and budding, and everything else. I think we have spring in New York also, isn't it, Hari Prasad?
On its way.
Good. Oh, good. So maybe you have to wait a few more weeks. Then connecting with the presence of the Lord within. For me, it was very dramatic and very ecstatic, actually. When I was sitting on my bench, I was crying. I was thinking, oh, thank you that you have removed the veil, and I can see you everywhere now, and I can see how everything rests in you. Yes, this is our first session. Now I'm looking at the watch. We are good in time. We have scheduled it a little bit like this, that we have now 15 minutes where everyone can ask questions and so on, and then after 15 minutes, those of you who wish to move on, of course you can move on at any time, but then we have a little pause and you can do something else, and those who want to continue to ask questions or about this spiritual subject, they are welcome to ask their relevant questions. Thank you very much for staying with me. I hope you have gotten something, and you will be rewarded with deep spiritual experiences yourself.
Thank you. So we're opening it up for questions. Please send your questions to Michael in direct message in the app. And the first question will go to Rob. You can kindly ask your question if such an answer.
Okay, I wasn't sure if Michael was going to ask the question for me.
Maybe ask yourself.
I was curious, after your trauma in the hospital, you had mentioned that you left the hospital and then were inspired by some of the first signs of spring, I think the budding of the trees and maybe the birds chirping. I was curious what if you had emerged from the hospital to a winter storm, or maybe just a plain gray day, would you have perceived an opportunity?
Wonderful, Rob. Wonderful, Rob. I have given many, many lectures and seminars all over the world, and this question which you asked came up. It was not asked by the people, but I myself was thinking on my own about this question. How can you see the workings of the divine in a winter storm? And I have then started to develop or search for meditations so that in fact you can see the workings of the divine always. Because it's also in the winter storm that the hand of Krishna is there. It's also in the gray day that the hand is there. It's only in our interpretation of the phenomena, in this little thing called the mind, that we become elated and dejected by what we see. Most probably, to see the workings of God everywhere is possible when you practice a little resilience. Resilience in your is something like an internal emotional immune system that helps you as an invisible armor, so to say, against the onslaught of unpleasant things in your life. When you have this resilience, you can definitely see it everywhere. And in fact, one of my experiences that convinced me of this was in the Himalayas. I used to go regularly in the Himalayas, and on one trip it was when I wanted to go to the on the way to the source of the Ganga. You have to go quite high. I was attacked by the late afternoon storms. These storms are so heavy that they can blow an elephant off the path, what to speak of a human beings. I knew about these storms, but up till then I had experienced them very mildly, but this was really, as we say in New York, full on. And I was hiding behind a big rock which would break the impact of the storm. So I was there and I was thinking, wow, this is serious now. I don't know if I can continue this journey or if I have to stay behind this rock. So as I was staying, I started to sing. That's always when I have time, I sing. I like to sing. And my glance or my eyes looked to the side. And there, Rob, in a valley, I saw a person sitting on the rock. He was facing the storm. By now, snow, it had started to snow. He was in the midst of this snow. It was not so thick, I could still see him, but there was snow coming. And he had closed his eyes and his lips moved in saying once some sacred mantras. I don't know what he intoned. And his face looked so enlightened. At that moment, even the clouds parted and some spotlight of the sun came upon him, and I thought, wow, he's unaffected. He has so much resilience, but he also has some spiritual vision. He sees something. I could see he was crying, not because of the cold or the storm. No, it was the expression was one of an exalted state of consciousness, a delightful state of consciousness. So we have, as a spiritual person, we have certain spiritual practices, either meditations or what I'm teaching all over the world is mantra meditations that help you really to see divinity even on a gray day and within the storm, even when you are tired, because the mantra acts like a vehicle that brings you away from the mental plane and its interpretations. This is good, this is bad, this is pleasant, this is unpleasant, I like, I dislike. It brings you deeper to the platform of this unchanging soul or self, where you can see yourself and where you can connect with the Supreme Self at all times. Rob, I do not know you. Your face looks familiar. Have we seen each other before?
I don't think so.
Don't think so. You have the nice effulgence of a spiritual person. that's maybe why one feels family or some connectedness. Rob, a regular spiritual practice works wonder. It lifts you beyond the material perception, the material. It gives you resilience, I think that's the right word, and it also connects you with the spiritual reality wherever you are, even in a snowstorm in the Himalayas, like that sadhu. thank you.
No, thank you.
Well, we will actually wrap here, and then we'll take our next question afterwards. So grateful for all of your presence. Thank you so much. And Tetchinamana Swami means the world to us that you come and share wisdom. And thank you. Is there anything that you would like to say in closing?
In closing, no. A fish who is dying of thirst in the ocean needs psychological treatment. Or to say it in a better way, if we cannot see the spiritual reality right around us, then it is time for us to explore the right spiritual practice that can help us to get rid of the veil that covers our spiritual perception. That was poetic. I remembered the two fishes in the ocean, but a fish who says he dies of thirst in the midst of the ocean needs spiritual counseling. So in the same way, we need some spiritual inspiration so that we can see the workings of the divine workings all around us. And this is the gift of any genuine spiritual tradition to us, that it gives us these processes by which we can awaken to a spiritual insight. Thank you very much. So you please guide us so that we can continue.
Thank you very much. So we'll be back again next time, and we have four more sessions with Sachin. We're very, very excited. And those of you who can stay with us now, please do. We have a little more time for another half an hour. Thank you very much. All the best. So, Patsy, are you able to stay with us?
Yes.
We would love for you to ask a question. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm seeing all the messages in the chat. It's a great joy to share spiritual knowledge. It is not that, I mean, nice that you thank me, but see, we are nourished on the spiritual path by two things. One is our own insights, which we have, and the other is if we share these insights with others, and we can see that it means something to them. Then we feel grateful. A spiritual person really has two needs. He wants to grow spiritually, and he actually wants to contribute to the well-being of others. Oh, Brahma Tirtha, so nice to see and hear you again. Ah, Haribo, Brahma Tirtha. Brahma Tirtha is my friend from where the alligators are. It's in Florida. Yes, he's there.
Patsy, please kindly ask your question.
Oh, thank you. Pradam, Sachin and Daswami, thank you so much for your precious time and wisdom. So my question is, like being able to connect to spiritual experience and its reality seems so much easier when not living in the society and with people in the world. It's at some point of my life, I wanted to check myself in a nunnery, you know, in a temple, but I was convinced and, you know, talked out of it and to develop my spiritual life in the world. And so as you described in your spiritual awakening story, it actually culminated in the forest. So how does one to attain that state when having so much responsibility in the mundane life involving multitudes of people and personalities?
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful. One of my friends is a professor in Switzerland. He wanted to go into a monastery in Thailand. You know, he wanted to join the monks. And he had his ticket ready. He had his everything arranged to at least go there for 2 years. Then a week before his flight was going on, he had the following dream. In his dream, he arrived at the foot of that mountain where the monastery was on top, and he was about to climb up the mountain when he saw the monks were coming down. And I don't know if he had an interpreter or but he could communicate to the monks in the dream, and he asked, "Where are you going? I'm going up and you are coming down." And the monks were saying, "See, we are coming into this, we are leaving the monastery, we're going on the world, in the world, because we want to share the knowledge which we have obtained. Keeping it for ourselves will not let this knowledge grow in us. But if we share it, if we give it away, then only it will grow." So he somehow this dream was more than just a passing, fleeting dream. He felt it was an instruction. He cancelled his ticket, and he continued in the university and became a really, really well-reputed professor. His name is Professor Matthias Schütz, and he has published many books and has started many spiritual initiatives in the world. However, he could, so there is one reason to stay in the world, Patsy, and that is, I mean, there are many reasons, but for a spiritual person, he stays in the world out of compassion, because by compassionate actions, he, when he shares spiritual knowledge, really, he will grow even more in his spiritual understanding. But we have to assess ourselves. Are we on the level where we can share something, or are we very hungry and need to feed ourselves first before we can give nourishment to others? What I would suggest to you, who seems to be a very spiritual-minded person, why don't you explore possibilities to sometimes take a retreat? You can do this even while staying in New York, that sometimes you say, okay, this day I will not work, I will not do anything, I will just take care of my own spiritual nourishment, and you can read and do whatever spiritual practice you feel inclined to and that nourishes you. Or you can take bigger, greater retreats where you may go to a retreat center. I know in upstate New York are many. And or you go to, and leave the country for some time and go to a monastery, ride in the forest in Asia, or so on, go a little bit further away, leave the Western culture. But from time to time, it's very important for us to step back, and from the distance, you will see so many things which you have overlooked. It's like the painter Leonardo da Vinci. He said, from time to time, step back and look at your work from the distance, because more can be taken in one glance, and you will understand where your work lacks proportion and harmony. You can understand this and do the necessary corrections. After all, shouldn't your work be inspiring? So in the same way, from time to time, go on retreat, I would suggest, Patsy, and then nourish yourself spiritually. And then when you return, you will be like someone who comes out of a perfume shop. Everyone will notice, Oh, so the fragrance of roses is coming. Everyone will share, in other words, the spiritual insights which you have gathered. Whether or not you speak about them, that is up to your choice, but you will. The light doesn't need to speak in order to make the room bright. So someone who is spiritually charged will in the same way speak through silence even. Yeah. Thank you.
So Swamiji, can I say that the synthesize what you just said in the way that I understand it? So can I say that you can't fully attain spiritual experience mingling, involving yourself in the world with multitude of people and personality without exercising personal conviction and commitment to develop the, you know, my own connection.
Yes.
To include retreat.
Yes.
Myself away from the world.
Yeah? Exactly, Patsy. Just like you need to breathe in and then breathe out, you need to sometimes take care of the way inwards. You know, otherwise you only breathe out. Oh, you need to go to the ambulance after some time.
Such a great reminder and reinforcement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bruno, would you kindly ask your question?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Satchananda Swami, for coming to the world and sharing your being and your time and your wisdom with us. That's really wonderful, and we got so much from you last year. And anyway, one question I wanted to get from you. You know, many of us, myself, I'm so early on my own spiritual journey. I have had actually a couple of experiences along the lines of the one you described today. You know, but you've lived such a, you know, long journey with so many experiences, and so I wonder if you could maybe reflect on, you know, the arch of your journey, and maybe if you went to back to your younger self, you know, as a youth back in Germany, you know, what piece of wisdom would you share with yourself that maybe you think would be helpful for us to hear as well?
Thank you, Bruno. That is very, very nice question, because when we understand the background of a person, his real experiences, it is so helpful. See, I'm born as a son of someone. They're called the post-war generation, our generation. My father had fought in the Hitler army, and as we all know from history, the Germans were defeated and censored very much. After all, they had started the First World War and they had started the Second World War, so the Allied forces gathered together. America played a big role there, fortunately. France, England, you know, they said we must make sure that Germany is tamed. It doesn't come up and start a third world war. These people are. So, anyways, much of Germany was bombed. Berlin was bombed very severely. Hamburg, was bombed very severely to really make sure that the Germans would not rise to power so soon again. And my father was looking at the rubble of or the pile of dirt now that once was Germany, and he dedicated himself to, you know, they had nothing. Our parents had nothing. Everything was lost, you know. And he dedicated himself to build up Germany again as a economic power, or, you know, just to build it up, build houses, build economy, build trade, build, you know, everything was destroyed. He taught us also like this, to be achievers, to bring the world together, to get a nice job, to excel in many ways. That was my education. So I tried many things as a youth. I tried to play music, to give, yes, I even tried to read. I tried to be a film producer. I think our Hari Prasad, you were also into produce. You had also this idea of making movies, and was very active, you know, because we were told like this. But I understood at that time that if I just play roles as a guitarist, as a young, intelligent student, as a this or that, if I just play roles, I will not be satisfied. I have to find myself. And then one day, a friend of mine who was meditating gave me a little slip of paper, and the paper, it said, "Who are you when everything that is not you is taken away from you?" Wow, that was a profound question. I already had doubts that in all these different roles I cannot find my satisfaction, I cannot find myself. But now this piece of paper, "Who are you when everything that is not you is taken away from you?" Oh, Bruno, that was a question. And sent me on my way. I started to read books on meditation, on self-realization, on the various wild thoughts of those who had gotten out of the box of materialistic living. And I then was understanding I need a spiritual path in order to understand who I am when everything else which I am not is taken away. You know, Bruno, you can lose everything in the world, but you cannot lose who you are. That stays with you. And if you do not find out who you are, wow, you are on the side of the losers, you know, because everything will be, eventually we will lose everything in this changing world. And this, the change is the thing which is inherent in the world. So you must find out that unchangeable thing. And then I made a mistake. I thought, I will be the best monk. I started to fast for a long time. I did not sleep. I had my spiritual practice until I noticed the same self-centered ego, the same hungry ego is in the center. Only the food had changed. Before, I wanted money, I wanted recognition, I wanted to be liked by others in the way the society works. But then I just changed it, and I became one of these immature monks. Be careful meeting them. they have nothing. They have only changed the dress. Then I started to see I need to really move myself, the narrative of myself, the false story, out of the center, and discover who I am as a part of God. Yeah, you know, Bruno, we all make mistakes. We are human beings. And we all have to be honest. We have to listen to wisdom without defending our mistaken position. We have to act without pretending. We have to learn to love without expecting anything in return. And this is the spiritual school requires us to mature in many ways. But if we are willing to do this, we are gifted with the most extraordinary gifts, which are which the Lord keeps waiting for us. Bruno, I believe that the Lord has a big treasure house, and there are many shelves, and on each shelf there are most costly jewels and diamonds, and there's one place reserved which says has your name, Bruno, and there are your jewels and your diamonds, which he will give you the moment you are serious about your spiritual awakening. Hari Bol. Good, everyone. Let me now secretly look at the time. Here it is. Is there still another question?
Jaya, would you ask your question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much. Maharaj, I was trying to understand the analogy of the fish that you gave. So the fish that went for explanation, that fish stepped back from the immediate world and then found himself and then came back to preach. That was the analogy that you gave. You stopped at the point that when the fish who went for explanation said, you won't believe what I say.
Yeah. These are wisdom stories. They don't explain everything so clear. What the point of this story is that the ocean is all around, but the fishes didn't see them because they had not developed the vision or the understanding. And in the same way as the fishes don't have the understanding, we poor conditioned souls also lack the spiritual vision and sometimes do not see the spiritual reality around us. And there is a communication problem. Sometimes the saints have found it very difficult to translate their experiences into the language of the modern man. There's this old wisdom story. You will all like it. It's about a disciple who was very, very slow in learning because he really didn't see the urgency of spiritual life. So one day his spiritual master, who had tried everything, took him into a river. You know, they were doing their ablutions, or they washed and bathed in the river. And the guru, all of a sudden, took his disciple and dunked him underwater and wouldn't let him come out. The disciple was struggling. But the guru was very strongly built. He pressed him underwater. Finally, in the last minute, he allowed him to come out. And the disciple said, Guru Maharaj, I'm trying to give you my life. Why do you want to take my life? And the Guru said, I didn't want to take your life. I just wanted to tell you one thing. If you would have struggled with the same intensity which you are using in order to prolong your insignificant temporary life here, if you would struggle like this for your eternal life, you would be already self-realized. I needed to show you something. So this somehow that student understood. But that's not done normally. I don't think in Upbuild we do such things. It is a traditional story. No, I mean this would be not appropriate in the modern times. But I just wanted to say sometimes it is the difficulty. My dear everyone, we have a situation here. Our guest from New York is very hungry. His stomach is growling. I've never heard such a biological phenomena. It is really loud, and we need to feed the poor young New Yorker, otherwise we are a crime. Is it your stomach? No, it's our guest from New York, no? What are you not supplying your people in New York with enough food? So I think our time has come, and I really feel he can't get out as long as I sit in this situation. So we really will need to take care of him. I thank you very, very much. I think we can end here. It would be my great happiness to see you in the next emission or next program about spiritual experiences. I'm very, very grateful to see people whom I know. I have seen George and CP for a short time, and I'm very happy to be on this call, and I will give my best to try to explain and then hopefully guide you also in a way that you can also make profound spiritual experiences. Thank you very much. Would you like to say something in concluding, Hari Prasad?
Thank you very much. It's such a gift to have you with us, as I expressed, and now coming out with your energy and your wisdom and experiences, I feel much wealthier. I hope that everybody has the same experience. It's a wonderful thing to be together in this community. Thank you all for showing up, and thank you, Satchinandana Swami. We can't wait for much more with you, including at the end of this online series, an in-person event in New York City, Cultivating Inner Life with Satchinandana Swami.
Oh yeah, thank you for mentioning it. I'm actually only a few weeks away from New York. New York is one of my favorite places to go. I feel it's a very creative energy which is there. Everything is possible as long as you know how to ride the waves. Sometimes the waves may come over us, but as long as you know. And I will come to New York, and we have scheduled an event with Upbuild. Please already reserve the date. It would be very nice if at the end we can see each other personally and have personal exchanges. Very nice.
Wonderful. So all the best, everyone. See you very soon.